This week's episode is sponsored by the play A Southern Girl's Gotta Have It, written and directed by Elaine Alexander. A special dinner theater production of A Southern Girl's Gotta Have It will be performed February 12th through 14th. For more information, go to capefeartix.com. This week's episode is also sponsored by Walter Guy Jewelers, located at 220 Hay Street in downtown Fayetteville. For more information about Walter Guy Jewelers, call 910-868-6472 or go to their website at www.walterguyjewelers.com.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Story Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. You can listen to this and all previous episodes at nctheaterstories.com. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 30. Our guest tonight is the redoubtable Anthony Morrison. Anthony, welcome back to the microphone and to our show. You were here some months ago. I hope you remember that.
Yes, I do. I had a wonderful time.
And it was memorable.
Yes, indeed.
And you were given a lovely gift, I bet.
Yes, by you. It was a book.
Good. Well, there's something else for you tonight, but I'm not telling you what it is yet.
Okay.
You're going to love it, I think. Anyway, Anthony, we were talking before taping. I was taking down notes. I said, how shall I introduce you? And you were giving me all this information. And then finally you said, why don't you just let me tell it? And what a good idea. Why didn't you tell me that 9 months ago when this podcast started? I could have just said, you know, go ahead. All right, you go ahead and tell us about your training and background.
Well, yeah, I'd be afraid when you ask, a little afraid when you ask me to do stuff like that because I can go off a little bit.
Well, I have a gong here, don't I?
I'll just tell you some of the stuff that I'm proud of. First of all, I'm a graduate of Terry Sanford High School, senior class vice president that year, bicentennial year of 76. Then I went to the North Carolina School of the Arts, and I got my bachelor's degree from there in design. And I got a little ahead of myself.
Theater design.
Hmm?
Was it theater design? No.
Theater design.
Yes, uh-huh.
But I got a little ahead of myself. Before I went to the North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem, I went to Wingate University.
And where is that?
That's in Wingate, North Carolina.
Ah.
When I went there, it was a 2A school, so we didn't even have a basketball. We had a basketball team, but not a football team. But now it's Wingate University, and I got my associate's degree in voice from there. Yes.
And then went immediately to School of the Arts after that?
Not immediately. It's just I just happened, like I think I told you in the last show, I just happened to be walking by the bulletin board, and it had a brochure about the North Carolina School of the Arts, and I was intrigued by it because they had high school there as well as college. And that's when I sent my little application in, and they asked for my portfolio, and the rest of it is history.
Well, and the number of people, you know, what are they, every beginning class, they have so many X number of people applying, and I think they take 1 out of 10 or something like that.
That was the scary thing about it. They take in so many. I told people it's a lot easier to get in than it is to get out with that name, because they weed through.
And each year you have to be, every year get accepted again, is that right?
No, not in my case. It so happened when I went there, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be a set designer. I wanted to be an illustrator. And they didn't have that major. And they remembered that. So when it came up to my junior year, they didn't ask me back. And everyone told me that I should appeal because that's their way of seeing how much you really want it.
I see.
And I said, well, I'm not going to appeal, but they forced my hand. So I went and appealed, and they said, then they brought back to my memory that when I initially got there.
I see.
And they wanted to make sure I wanted it.
I see. Well, terrific background. And that's one of the most outstanding such schools in the world, I understand. You know, people just want to get in there from all over the world.
I actually didn't call myself an artist until I went there.
I see. Now, Anthony, when you were here last time, we were talking about your wonderful program in the schools. Just briefly tell us about that again.
Well, I had a one-man show when I was last year I spoke up called Step Into My Gallery. Now, this is because I had been drawing all my life different pictures and stuff, and I fell in love with eyes. And it just so happened I started doing portraits. And then I was asked to come to one of the schools, not as an artist to show off my work, but just to give the kids an opportunity to introduce someone to a guest in the school. And I used my work as a way of introducing myself to the students. And the papers saw it, and they recorded it and said that this would be a great idea to go into the schools and talk to the kids about my characters. And that's where it all began.
Now, these are historic characters, right? Where they were real people.
They were real people, but the pictures that I showed were not people that I knew personally.
But they were historic. No,
at the time, they were just everyday kids, but it was something about the eyes and the expression that sometimes made you sad, sometimes it made you laugh. And it was interesting, they said, the way I talked about the stories, which tapped into their emotions. And that's when I thought, well, maybe this would work as a show, because I told you also there was another artist named Granddaddy Junebug that I had seen perform before, but he did stories, wise tales of
the
past.
Storyteller.
And I thought, well, maybe if I could do something similar to that, but totally different with the pictures, and become the different people in my gallery.
So you'd walk into the classroom with a stack of pictures, put one on an easel or something, and become that person and talk in his voice and...
Yeah, I just started telling them the techniques and how it took to draw the picture. And then I would sort of get into the persona of the person that I showed them. And then that's when I decided to start incorporating the hats. Because sometimes when you're working with kids, especially from kindergarten up to Senior Citizen Center, it's hard to keep their attention span. So I had to get something to sort of throw them off a little bit when they started to get a little rowdy. And that seemed to...
So you had several hats that you brought with you?
Well, at the time, I had always had a fascination with hats. I used to collect them. If I see them somewhere, I'll collect them and just store them. And I just, very rarely did I change my hats that often, but I just love to have them and sometimes put them on. But when I realized I had so many hats, then I could use them in a show. It worked out just right. I started getting dreadlocks, afros, all kinds of things.
Oh, well, how fortunate. But you no longer do that.
Yes, I still do.
Oh, you still do that?
Not as much now, because one of the premises of the show was I dressed as an older man, and then I would be still young, and then give the illusion. Now I've caught up with that older man. So the things that I used to do are not quite as easy to do as I used to be in the past. Because I used to do this gray thing where I used to wash the gray out of my hair. As you can see, gray lives with me forever.
So. So you're still doing that to a point.
Yes. In fact, I will be doing some shows coming up in February for Black History Month out in Fort Bragg and some other local schools.
I see. But right now you have something called Seeing the World Through the Eyes of Children.
Exactly. This one is a little more closer to my heart because it gives me an opportunity to tap in on kids' emotions, because sometimes I don't think kids realize how blessed they are with the opportunities that they have in the school system and with families and with everything that we take for granted sometimes. So I did a series of pictures of kids who were living in poverty. And some of these are actual photographs that were taken by military friends of mine. And I would take away some of the background and just focus in on the kids' faces. And it's something about the sadness of an eye that is lost so much. And you can also see that the pain that they're going through in some of the textures of their skin, the hair, and the eyes. But I also noticed that the pictures that I chose, I wanted to have a hand somewhere to let them know that there's always a helping hand. And it seemed to help in the... Letting the kids understand that you need to take the time to thank those who make it possible for the opportunities that you have in this world. So when I approach it now with these pictures, like these kids are from all around the world, and they're pretty much all in poverty or living in some state of need.
But these are pictures, photographs perhaps from around the world?
Yes.
I see. These are not just local
No, people. They're not local at all.
I see. So you find, you just go through magazines or you just...
I go through magazines and usually I use famous photography pieces that usually have a corporation of a lot of kids or a few here and there. Mm-hmm. Like I said, are some that we're taking actually through the military. And I just crop in on the areas that sort of pull out emotion in you.
So you search for the children's pictures from around the world.
Yes.
And then when you see one that you notice it, they just grab you and you say, this is one that, here's something that I can work with.
It's the emotion in the eyes that grab
the eyes.
I've always been fascinated by eyes, even when I was a kid. And when I look into the eyes of a kid, I see so much. And a picture I wish I could show that they can't see, but I'll tell you about it. I did a picture of an older gentleman who had dreadlocks on his hair, and I was intrigued by if I could draw dreadlocks. But when I looked close into his eyes, it was something about the emotions that it took out of me. It made me almost want to cry.
Yes.
And I drew that picture unknowingly at the time. They look very close into his eyes. There's a little baby in one of the eyes, and there's a mother in the other one.
So this was inadvertent.
Inadvertent. I did not even realize it was there.
I see.
And when I tell people sometimes the eyes is the mirror to the soul,
yeah.
When I looked into those eyes, I felt as if I was looking into his soul.
Yeah.
And so that sort of incorporated that show. And then now when the kids look into the eyes of the kids around the world, they see a little bit of their souls.
And so you find a photo, and then you, why don't you choose one and tell us about it. It's the radio can be very visual if we're if we're skilled.
Actually, when I choose the pictures, it's something that has to be challenging for me as well.
Yes.
And the thing I loved about younger people, since they haven't had much life, their skin is soft, smooth, and there's not a lot of textures to work with. But yet, some of the clothes that they wear and the hair, the way it falls on their brow, and the eyes and the way all the details of that gives the draw towards the kids. But when you have an older hand, as you can see, for those who can see, there's so much that takes place with the aging of the hands.
Now, where did you find this picture?
Well, actually, this was one of those pictures that came around the Depression period.
I see.
During the Depression, when people had lost so much, were traveling, trying to find food and jobs and work. And it was just something about...
So I want to say to our audience that this is a large... it's what this is, pen and ink?
No, it's pencil.
Pencil. Pencil on white paper, and it's a larger than life face of a little girl. Perhaps she's 10, she has bangs and what is this?
This is another baby that the mother is holding over her, but you can only see the baby's
so
leg.
Is this that famous what is the name of that photographer? So you have, of course, I recognize it. This is one of the most famous pictures. Her name will come to me. She was just famous for her American Depression photos.
But the thing that people used to tell me sometimes, which used to bother me at first, they said that it's sort of like you're copying someone else's work. And in some ways, I am copying the photograph. Mm-hmm. But the thing that they don't realize, the details it takes to make the picture look like a photograph.
Yeah.
Like, I almost count every strand of that little girl's hair to get it just right on her brow, whereas the camera just duplicates that image.
Yeah.
When you have a pencil, eraser stump, which smooths down the pencil point, and an eraser, that's all I'm working with. And the color in her skin, the lightness in her cheeks and her eyes and her nose, that's just the color of the paper coming through in the background. So everything has to be balanced out with the positive and negative space. And that's why I think it's a totally different sort of medium when you take it from a photograph to a picture.
Absolutely. And you describe it so well. And when artists do this, they should not ever feel that sometimes people will, dismiss their work because it's, copied from a photo.
But that's the same thing about pencil sometimes. When people think of pencil drawings, they think of just an outline or a sketch. But as you can see, this is very detailed. It looks like a black and white photograph when you look at all the details tied together.
No, but it has the human touch, and so it's completely different. And the hand is a worn man who is obviously been working the field. You see his calluses, and he's cupping her. This is a man's hand. He's cupping his daughter's chin with the calluses there, rubbing, and it must be a very rough, that very smooth texture of her face, and then this muscular, hardworking hand with the nails all chipped and all.
And the sadness of the eyes.
Yeah.
I always look back at these eyes because I usually ask the kids sometimes, what are those eyes telling you?
Yeah.
And it gives them an opportunity to search within their own cell what they feel like they're telling them. And you'd be surprised how many different answers you get.
I can imagine.
And that's what I love, just to make them think, to tap in on their emotions.
But it's a look of worry, of kind of what next. Just marvelous, Anthony. And here another one. This last one we're looking at, this was a white girl, and now we see a girl of color. Tell us about this.
The reason why I love this one is most, if you notice the picture,
she's much younger, isn't she?
And if you notice the picture the first picture, she was looking directly into the camera.
Yeah.
This younger girl is looking away as if she's seeing something that has distracted her from whatever is taking place within the moment and the period. But yet, the challenge to me when I chose this was not only the beautiness of her face and her lips and her eyes, but was the hands brought in so much more detail on the baby, on the little girl's forehead. Yeah.
Now she's probably 3 years old. She has some hoop earrings in her ear, pierced ear.
Probably out of South Africa or something like that.
Yeah.
Some South Africa.
Where you got the photo. And then the man, and this time his hands are cupped almost in prayer over her forehead. And again, very worn hands with callus and chipped nails.
And then, if you don't mind me, interrupting you.
Please.
When I look at some of these pieces, it's a song, a little short version. And sometimes when you have a hand on you or something of that gives you peace.
Yes.
It's a little song that I just wanted. It always comes to mind. It goes, "You are my peace. You are my peace. You are my peace. And I worship thee." It's my way sometimes of saying that.
Beautiful.
It's just like, it's like God is touching us sometimes, and He gives us that peace, even the worst of times.
Yeah.
Because I show the kids some of the pictures, and sometimes, although they're living in poverty, you can see a little peace in their eyes, because they do have love. It may not be everything that we have, but they do have someone who loves them.
But here, these children, in material want, and perhaps going to bed hungry, whatever. We hear the statistics about American children are some of the most unhappy children in the world, because they, even though these children, it's one thing to be like the Syrian children, starving. I mean, they can't have that. But here we have love, being shown, by the adults in these children's lives. And it makes all the difference. So you go into a classroom and you take a picture like this, and you talk to them about it.
Well, actually, I don't actually take pictures. I wish I was a photographer. I used to.
No, I mean take the photo, the drawings.
And then I put them on easels as if they're stepping into the gallery. Mm-hmm. That's where I got the first name of the show, "Step Into My Gallery."
Yes.
And the second show was, it's still "Step Into My Gallery," but see the world through the eyes of the children. So all of those pictures are mainly kids from impoverished nations. And then, like I was saying, now I'm mainly dealing with color and trying to put more color in my work, more acrylics or watercolors and sometimes a little bit.
So here we have an adult black man, a huge picture, a drawing of him. And is he a warrior? Is he
a lawyer?
No, a warrior.
Yeah, he's a warrior. I thought you said lawyer. No, he is a warrior.
No.
In fact, when I drew this picture, I wish I could show it to them. There was a row of warriors, like military police, basically, yeah, an African nation. And you could see all these orange bandanas that they had on their heads,
yes,
in a row behind him. And I was going to initially put that in there, but I love the way even the roughness and the seriousness took place in his eyes, took on the color of the red of the, yes, beret on his head.
Yes.
And then I loved the chin, the chiseled chin, the full lips, the full nose. And I did cheat on this picture. That's why I never bring the photograph with me, because you would have seen some of my mistakes, uh-huh, or where I cheated. He has sweat on his brow and, uh-huh, across his nose and downside his face. You can see a little bit the color of the water within the color, yeah, of the wash. But he actually had like water running down his face, which is very difficult to duplicate.
I can imagine.
And I will be the first to admit I could not duplicate, uh-huh, it beautifully enough to put it in, yeah, there. So, yeah. But it still gives that feel of, you know, exhaustion and hard work. And in control, too.
Yeah. There's, well, it says... Oh, did Bob lock the door? We're going to take a pause here. James, I want you to ask. We have locked Jason out of the house. And I want you to ask, start talking with our guest for just a minute.
So, you haven't been doing any recent shows, are you? You well, besides the ones you perform in, or rather you wrote, mm-hmm, are you at all interested in doing any sort of theater like that in the future?
Yes, I'm. Like, I worked in the theater for many years after I graduated. So I used to do a lot of theater, but now I want to get back in the schools and continue where I left off, because basically I have a whole different message, because I think now that with the computer age that we live in now, that kids are not focused on the world around them. They don't communicate. We're raising a whole generation of kids who don't know how to interact.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is so technical now, and I think it's more important now than it was when I originally started, because I used to tell the kids, sometimes you need to just lay out in the grass and look up through the leaves of the trees and see the light flicker off the leaves. How many kids did you see looking at nature or the sunset? They're too busy watching that light that shines in front of their faces, in front of that phone or that iPad. So the shows are more important to me now because I have a stronger message, because I think we need to interact more.
I found that nature is overrated, but
I can't agree with you more, Anthony. Good for you. I'm not at all pleased with the children's distance from nature these days.
I actually had a niece tell me that if you didn't email her, you wouldn't be hearing from her. She doesn't write letters or speak to you on the phone.
Oh, I see. I see.
Now that's kind of scary.
Now let's look at this other drawing. And we have a girl. Tell us about this girl.
Well, I love the eyes on both of the young lady, and we have also a cat in this picture as well. He has green eyes.
A house cat.
A house cat. And both of them were staring back at me, and I said, I'm going to have to see if I can duplicate this. And that was a challenge, because usually when you have two sets of eyes looking at you, you can only get one set to work properly. And so this will work to my advantage, as opposed to the detailing on the cat and the softness of her skin. And then the freckles on the little girl's face were very important to me, because I remember doing a picture which took me, I don't know, about 4 or 5 hours years ago for a young lady and her son. And she said, something's wrong. I said, what's wrong? It looks just like him. She said, I don't know what it is. And then I realized I left out his freckles. And you don't look the same without your freckles. So it was important that when I did this picture that I got all the details. But the thing was the piercing eyes of the cat as well as of the little girl.
Yes.
Which was a challenge to me, because now I'm working mainly with color. And a lot of colors go in play, washes and highlights and, you know, inside the eyes.
So the the eyes are so three-dimensional and so has so much depth to them. And so what happens if you make a mistake?
That's the problem with painting. It's very difficult to cover up a mistake with painting. Mm-hmm. That's why I start with the lightest color. Actually, once you cartoon it out, first thing, if you get all the details properly and the dimensions right in the cartooning of the picture, mm-hmm. then when you lay in the washes light color to dark, you can cover up. One thing about acrylic paint, sometimes, and depending on what paper you're using, you can wash it out or add or delete, uh-huh. which is not probably not the professional way of doing it, but I'm self-taught, so a lot of the technique that I'm bringing to the table is new and fresh, just uh-huh. to my liking, not probably everybody.
Now that you're moving toward color, but to me, just superbly from my eye, but was it just a huge challenge? I mean,
the challenge is more so patience, because you can sometimes sit and draw for hours on end, but when you're working with color, you have to let certain colors dry or wash in, and then I have to go away and come back. And that works to my advantage sometimes, sometimes to my disadvantage, because I like to finish stuff sometimes. So I had to work at pacing myself differently.
I see. So what's your studio like at home?
My studio is wonderful until I start working in it. I start throwing paints and water. I find
that... Well, we all expect that.
It becomes a mess. I mean, seriously. Mm-hmm. Especially when I'm building things. But when I'm painting, I find that when you put a little color here and you add a little wash to it, you can use that color in different areas. So I'm always not throwing anything away. I'm keeping everything at reaching distance. Uh-huh. And I find that intriguing sometimes, how you can get some of the perfect colors just through just throwing colors you've already put down. That's what I'm intrigued by. With unlike pencil, sometimes all you can do is erase, uh-huh. use the eraser stuff, smooth it, erase. But color is so much more challenging. But, you know, I'm always out for a challenge.
Now, do you have a certain routine, a certain time when you go to work? I mean, do you treat this like a job? I mean, do you get up and your studio's in your house, isn't it?
Yes.
And so how do you organize your day?
Organizing my day starts early in the morning. I have to get my physical body prepared before I can even think about anything artistically. So I get up at 4:45 and I'm in the gym at 5:30, and I have a friend I work out with for a few hours, and then I do what I call my coffee curls, which is really just drinking coffee and running off at the mouth. Then I have my coffee curls, and then I go back and do my abdominal and cardio with some friends of mine. You'll be surprised how many young people can't keep up with me at 57 today.
Well, I can imagine that. Before the taping, you were telling me about your stretching, and you can still do the splits and put your foot behind your head.
I love to sort of throw people off sometimes, because it's just like the shows when I used to pretend I was older than what I am. Yes. Some people look at an older gentleman stretching and think that he's limited to what he can do. But I've been stretching ever since I was a kid, so I can put my legs over my back of my head, and I also can do a perfect split.
My goodness. So you start with at the gym.
And then that gets me mentally, physically prepared. Yes. And then usually, if I'm going to be painting that day, I've already laid out the picture and I've already had it cartooned out on my easel. And then I go and just put the paints and then I start painting. Right now, since I'm semi-retired, I can do it that way. But when I was working, I had to set certain times on the weekends to paint.
Surely.
Because I had to go to work every day. But now I'm self-employed and I work in the school systems on just a few days. Uh-huh. I have an open time to just paint as I will, but that doesn't always work out as well either, because I go through spurts. I have an artistic spurt where I can draw nonstop, don't even think about food, and that's, I don't eat, I just paint.
Yes.
But I can't, my mom says it's not healthy, she'll call and say, get away from it for a while, come on, get something to eat. So, but now I've learned how to sort of balance it out, and I'm painting more now because I have more time to paint.
I see.
And one little key I want to tell you, that it's sort of like it's a circle. There's an older lady friend of mine at the spot. I won't call her name because I didn't tell her I was going to speak of her. She used to sew, paint. just a lot of things, and she got to a point where she couldn't paint anymore, and she had just was just collecting. She had a lot of collection of stuff, and her daughter and myself got together, and we just decided that, and she decided she would no longer paint. And this is before I really started painting. And she said, "Anthony, if there's anyone I would want to have these, it would be you." And that kind of warmed my heart because...
Have what?
Her paints.
Her materials.
And her brushes.
Oh, how wonderful.
And the thing was, I had not at that time said I was going to start painting, but it gave me the incentive that it was time to move on, and it was somebody passing something on to me, which was giving me to give it new life, a new start. And the reason why I brought this story up is this is the same young lady in one of my shows. She made me a scarf for the older man of many different colors and a toboggan. And I use that scarf in my shows. And to have that same lady give her paint sets to me to paint, it's almost like everything went full circle.
Yes, beautiful. Well, Anthony, you're an inspiration. Now, I first met you. Now, you say you're 57, but we started the Gilbert Theater 22 years ago, and about 20 years ago, you came and auditioned for a play, Shakespeare, in the Garden.
Yes.
And what was your which play was it?
I cannot tell you. I cannot tell you the play, but I can remember my little lines. But I won't go into that.
Well, anyway. It was a smallish part.
It was,
wasn't it?
It was a small part.
Small part, and but it was up. I can see Dust standing at the top of the hill up here, in the garden, and but I think it was probably,
All I remember was the beauty of your theater that you did Shakespearean pieces in your garden in the back, and when I saw that stage downstairs. Mm-hmm. I was just intrigued by just your concept and how you brought theater into that space and made it come alive. And I was intrigued by that and had to be a part of it. And that Shakespearean piece was one of those pieces that is still true to my heart because I have the pictures from it on my wall.
Do you really? Oh, wonderful. It was Midsummer Night's Dream.
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, Anthony, speaking of painters, my gift to you this visit is this book. I think you're going to love it. This is it's a series of books, and the overall title is The History and Techniques of the Great Artists. Mm. And this particular one is Pizarro, one of the early Impressionists.
That is great.
And so here it is, and this series shows you the work, the color photos and all, but there's a lot of text which talks about the technique and who influenced him. But he influenced others, the famous, you know, Manet and others.
Well, I definitely cherish this, and I will steal some of his techniques in my future pictures, I'm
well,
sure.
Well, they say about art, you know, art isn't so much, you know, creating, it's recreating and borrowing and...
Exactly.
You know, we're so frequently asked to, you know, give attribution to stuff. In recent years, I just forget that. You know, okay, somebody thought of this before I did, but I'm not going to try to remember who it was or whatever. It's just a good idea and I'm going to repeat it. And I'm not claiming it as my own. It's just that in that world out there that all of these thoughts are swirling around and we pick them up.
Well, I think that just about every art is somewhat of a derivative of something else. Like High School Musical is a derivative of West Side Story, which is a derivative of Greece, or Greece was a derivative of West Side Story, which all goes back to Romeo and Juliet. And even Romeo and Juliet was actually based on a poem written by someone else.
Will really did his share of borrowing. Well, lots, we find out, don't we? We certainly do. Anthony, this has been absolutely marvelous. You know, folks, this is our last podcast. I've enjoyed this series so much. We started last May. I didn't know how to spell podcast when I heard about this, but I had I have trouble turning on a black and white television, and so I didn't give much hope to my ever doing anything like this, but a friend urged me to do it, and he said, get someone to help you. And I instantly thought of James Johnson, and he has been such a great sport and so talented as a performer and as a technician. And he has been the technical director for these 9 months, and show number 30 tonight. And of those early podcasts, I would find fault with him. I think I'm kind of ashamed of it now, but I thought it was kind of up to me as an older, perhaps wiser person to try to shape him up. And to frequently, when I felt at my wit's end that I didn't have what it took, I thought, we need to bring a parent in on this. And so I thought of his mother. I know his mother, and she's no nonsense. And I'm not ashamed to say it. Well, I'm a little bit ashamed that I frequently threatened to call his mother. But he has really shaped up, so I think I did some help there. So
he's grown a lot.
He has really grown a lot. And so our podcast, I like to think, has been useful in many ways for the theater community, the arts community. But here we are, a lost soul saved, James Johnson. Anyway, back on the straight and narrow. Good for him. So it is our final. What do you have to say, James, about this? You're grateful, I'm sure. Very,
yes,
very grateful.
It's been an incredibly fun experience. I've learned a lot about. When Lynn approached me, I had been sort of interested in learning more about podcasts because I wanted to try doing a audio play, which is still in the works. We're still in the editing process, which I found out takes a lot longer when you're recording every actor separately and sort of editing them all together. So I jumped at the opportunity. It's been a lot of fun.
So he has really made this possible, as well as my wonderful guests, these last 9 months. And so I don't have a guest for him, a gift for him, for James, but there is his envelopes there on the table, and grossly underpaid, but there it is. Now, Anthony, so yeah, we come to the end of this, these North Carolina theater stories. But for months now, I've been ending each show with this, asking my guests the following question. Do you know what the universal question is? And no one has known the answer. I'm not surprised. And I have said for all these weeks and weeks that I do know the answer, and I'm going to give the answer soon. Well, tonight it has finally arrived. It's tonight. And you and James are going to find the answer. And Jason, sitting in the living room waiting to start the second part of our show, the oral history, is about to find out. But let's just take apart the question for a minute. The universal question. The is an article that really kind of focuses the, you know, really focuses on what's to follow. Universal. Well, we have looked at your art tonight. So you're what we've talked about tonight, and you're being my final guest has just been perfect as a lead in to this answer, Anthony. And you're talking, showing drawings, paintings of these children in need. But they have around them, around their face, on their chin or on their head in your drawings, we see these beautiful hands. These hands of most likely a parent, loving hands. And we know that somehow everything is going to be all right because this child has someone like this in their lives. And so universal, worldwide, What is the question that everybody, regardless of age, regardless of race, or class, or any of those things that we use to divide people up? And it's timeless. The answer is do you love me? Asking James to dim the lights and go to black. Why urge you all to find a play to see this week? Thank you for your company.